Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to IndiGo's conference call to discuss the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2021 financial results. My name is Aman, and I'll be your coordinator. At this time, the participants are in listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow today's management discussion. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to your moderator, Mr. Ankur Goyal, Head of Investor Relations for IndiGo. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the fourth quarter and fiscal year 2021 earnings call. We hope that you and your families are safe and in good health. We have with us our Chief Executive Officer, Rono Dutta, and our Chief Financial Officer, Jiten Chopra, to take you through our performance for the quarter. Wolfgang Prock-Schauer, our Chief Operating Officer, and Sanjay Kumar, our Chief Strategy and Revenue Officer, are also with us and are available for the Q&A session. Before we begin, please note that today's discussion may contain certain statements on our business or financials, which may be construed as forward-looking. Our actual results may be materially different from these forward-looking statements. The information provided on this call is as of today's date, and we undertake no obligation to update the information subsequently. A transcript of today's call will also be archived on our website. We will upload the transcript of today's prepared remarks today. The transcript of the Q&A session will be uploaded subsequently. With this, let me hand over the call to Rono Dutta.
Thanks, Ankur. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining the call. Hope all of you are safe and doing well. We have ended a very difficult year for the aviation industry. In the last quarter, we were seeing a lot of positive signs. The number of COVID cases was steadily going down. The capacity allowed by the central and the state government was going up. Consumers were showing their willingness to travel. As a result, we were showing an improving performance every quarter-over-quarter. However, with the second wave of the COVID-19 hitting us, we have seen a significant drop in travel demand. This, coupled with the fact that average fuel prices went up by roughly 26% quarter-over-quarter, impacted our results severely. As a result, for the quarter ended March 21, we reported a net loss of 11.5 billion rupees compared to a loss of 6.2 billion rupees for the December quarter and a loss of 8.7 billion rupees for the same quarter last year. For the full fiscal year 21, we reported a net loss of 58.1 billion rupees. Till the end of February, we saw a steady recovery in traffic, with over 180,000 passengers traveling with us daily, hitting peak load factors of 85% on certain days. Our daily bookings were also strong, reaching a peak of 231,000 bookings per day. Unfortunately, in March, we saw a resurgence in the number of COVID cases across the country, and we saw a 10% reduction in passengers. Our RASK for the quarter was 3.26 rupees, which was roughly similar to the RASK that we had in the December quarter. But the sharp increase in fuel costs, coupled with adverse foreign exchange impact, increases our losses during the quarter. During the quarter, we continued to increase capacity deployment in Tier 2 and Tier 3 markets to further strengthen our regional presence. We announced operations to 7 new airports during the quarter. Of this, we have already started operations to Leh, Kurnool, Rajkot, and Agra. On the international front, during the quarter, we were operating air bubble flights to 10 cities, mostly in the Middle East, as well as charter operations to various destinations. Our international capacity deployment increased by 36% compared to the December quarter. Overall, our international capacity in the fourth quarter was at around 30% of our pre-COVID international capacity. For the fiscal year 2021, our cargo revenues increased by 9.6% compared to the previous year. This has really supported us during this difficult time when the passenger services have been severely impacted. Building on the success of the cargo business, we have initiated a freighter program and are in the process of sourcing 4 A321ceo aircraft. The A321 P2F passenger to freighter conversion is the most efficient narrow-body freighter available, offering 24 container positions and supporting a payload of up to 27 tons. The delivery of our first freighter is expected in the first half of 22. Our investment in the freighter program will help strengthen our product and services in this segment and not only accelerate our own business recovery, but will also be a strong engine of economic growth for the country. During the quarter, we also continue to have the best on-time performance in the industry, with an OTP of 95.17%. With the rise in the COVID cases, there were several additional restrictions imposed by various state governments, and our customer relations team did a tremendous job in addressing them. Our customer complaints have been the lowest amongst all domestic carriers, at 0.1 complaint per 10,000 passengers. For this, I would like to thank all our employees, especially the operational staff, for the tremendous performance over the year. It also gives me immense pleasure to share that IndiGo is now certified as a great place to work. Let me summarize the key highlights for the year. We have focused on strengthening relationships with the key constituents, including our lessors, vendors, customers, and employees. We are replacing our older CEO aircraft with more efficient NEO aircraft. Our cash position is, of course, the most critical parameter in this crisis, and we have managed our cash position prudently. The COVID crisis also gave us the opportunity to look at new ways of doing business. We have done charters for both passengers and cargo with great success. We were able to support the government with the initiatives of repatriation flights. We were number one on average OTP for the year, and our net promoter score continued to be high, higher than what it was pre-COVID. We are strengthening our domestic network. We have opened new stations, and we're increasing our penetration of smaller cities. We are remaining true to our mission of being a catalyst in the economic growth of the country, and therefore deliberately and actively engaging connectivity in areas. Excuse me. Which needed the most, such as in the Northeast. Excuse me. Sorry about that. The most important pillar of strength for IndiGo is its employee culture. The most important pillar of strength for IndiGo is its employee culture, and we are very focused on a high performance and high employee engagement. In conclusion, we have our vision firmly rooted on the long term, and we are not willing to be distracted by the trials of the pandemic. This means that we are constantly questioning ourselves on what actions we need to take to keep the foundations and the pillars of IndiGo strong, so that when we do emerge from the crisis, we are well positioned for the good times that will inevitably arrive. Given this environment and lack of profitability for the year, our board of directors has not recommended dividend for the current year. While our cash position remains strong, with free cash of 71 billion rupees, as on 31st March, we remain committed to safeguard ourselves against the ongoing disruption by exploring various options of raising funds. In line with this, our board has approved raising of funds by way of qualified institutional placement of up to 30 billion rupees, and we have already initiated the shareholder approval process. In terms of our short-term outlook, we started seeing the decline in airline travel in March, but this decline accelerated in April and May. While May started off with very weak traffic, we did see a modest turnaround beginning from the last week of May, and this has continued into early June. This shows that passenger confidence returned swiftly with the decline in COVID. We are hopeful that with the reducing trend in COVID cases and the increased pace of vaccination, passenger confidence and airline traffic will gain further momentum by early July. So let me try and give you a broad brush picture on a best guess for the domestic revenue outlook. February 21 was the best month, we are post-COVID, and booking on certain days in February peaked at approximately 80% of pre-COVID levels. Our best guess scenario is that we will hit February 21 domestic travel levels again by third quarter of FY22. The near-term outlook for international continues to be weak, and a meaningful recovery of international traffic will probably be pushed to the fourth quarter of 22. Given the weakness in revenues in April and May, we will, of course, report deterioration in revenue performance for the quarter ending June 21 as compared to March 21. But after that, we expect to see a steadily improving revenue trend for the rest of the year, provided, of course, the anticipated third COVID wave is relatively flat. However, despite all the near-term challenges, our belief in the long-term India growth story with explosive growth in aviation remains intact. It is important to note that IndiGo has dedicated the past 12 months to strengthening its competitive position in the industry in terms of fuel costs, liquidity, customer service levels, network, and employee training and culture. We are therefore poised to expand aggressively, both domestically and internationally, once this pandemic is over. With this, let me hand over the call to our CFO, Jiten Chopra.
Thank you, Ronald, and good evening, everyone. Hope all of you are safe and doing well. For the full year fiscal 2021, we reported a net loss of 58.1 billion rupees, an EBITDA of 6.2 billion rupees, and an EBITDA margin of 4.3 billion. 3%. For the quarter ended March 2021, we reported a net loss of 11.5 billion rupees, an EBITDA of 6.5 billion rupees, and an EBITDA margin of 10.4%. On the revenue side, the second wave of COVID-19 starting March 21 resulted in demand erosion, thereby impacting RASK, which decreased marginally from 3.27 rupees in December quarter to 3.26 rupees in March quarter. While our yields remained flat at 3.7 rupees, our load factors reduced from 72% in the December quarter to 70.2% in March quarter. On the cost side, we were adversely impacted by fuel and forex, which was partially offset by additional capacity deployment. The fuel price went up significantly during the quarter by 26.1%, thereby increasing our fuel CASK from 0.75 rupees in the December quarter to one rupee in the March quarter. The foreign exchange went against us during the quarter, resulting in foreign exchange loss. While we had a gain of around 2 billion rupees in the December quarter, we had a loss of around 1.2 billion rupees in March quarter, impacting our costs and profitability adversely by 3.2 billion rupees. As a result, our loss during the quarter widened, breaking the improving trend that we had been seeing in the past few quarters. Despite the significant jump in fuel prices during the quarter, our CASK, excluding foreign exchange compared to December quarter, remained flattish at around 3.8 rupees. Given the adverse profitability, our average net cash burn increased from 150 million rupees per day in the December quarter to 190 million rupees per day in the March quarter. Given the current performance erosion with second wave of COVID-19, we anticipate the cash burn to further increase in the June quarter. Managing our cash position continues to remain our primary focus, and we continue to work with all our stakeholders. For this purpose, we are working on securing credit lines from lenders and entering into sale and lease back arrangement for new aircrafts. These two actions will likely result in additional liquidity of 45 billion rupees for the coming year. Apart from this, they have also secured a board approval for raising funds by way of qualified institutional placement up to 30 billion rupees. And this proposal is under consideration by the shareholders. We ended the quarter with a free cash of 71 billion rupees and a total cash of 185.7 billion rupees, a net reduction of 3.4 billion rupees in free cash as compared to December quarter. The capitalized operating lease liability was 257.4 billion rupees and a total debt including the capitalized operating lease liability was 298.6 billion rupees at March end. With this, let me hand it back to Ankur.
Thank you, Rono and Jitin. To answer as many questions as possible, I would like to request that each participant limit themselves to one question and one brief follow-up question if needed. And with that, we are ready for the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. An operator will take your name and announce your turn in the question queue. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Lokesh Garg from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, sir. Good evening. Basically, wanted to ask you, in this quarter, we have observed an increase in combined rental and maintenance costs. Is that natural? Is there something else that we need to watch out for? Plus, particularly given that somewhere in FY20, we started with quarterly provision of 2.6 billion, which was supposed to run out sometime in FY22. So can you just give us a perspective around that, please?
So basically, our rentals are largely variable and going up because of the capacity has gone up. This year, this quarter, if you see our capacity compared to last quarter, has significantly gone up. And that has added to our rental, which is primarily the supplementary rental we have talked about, which is variable in nature. Other than that, there has not been a significant change. And if you try and match that with our capacity movement, you'll be able to get to the answer.
And also, I would say that we are returning a lot of planes, but right now many of them are sitting around in MROs during the return process. So they're not going out as fast as we would like. But that's adding some cost to the rental costs.
Yes, I have a very short follow-ups. One thing is, how do you put in perspective the government tinkering of capacity down to 50% and increasing the fares? What objective does that serve in the current industry context? Because the industry could have chosen that itself. Second question, which is more numbers, is what is the per unit efficiency that you are achieving on A321neo? Versus CEO aircraft that you used to have. Thanks.
Okay. So on the government capacity and the fare bans, IndiGo has consistently been against any kind of government regulation. And we have, of course, objected to these bans and the capacity restrictions. Looking ahead in July, we are scheduling exactly at 50% of capacity. So we're going up to the limit, and again, we've written to the ministry that, hey, we'd like to go higher. So we are just hoping that the government will stay true to its word, and July 31, they will remove the capacity restriction. The second question was regarding CEOs versus... So let me tell you, we are very happy with the A321 aircraft. It has a unit cost that is 10% lower than the A320. So that's a very good thing, and this is allows us, therefore, to deploy the A321s in peak demands. So in a multiple frequency market, we take the 7:30 departure and use the A321, and for the other departures, we use A320, and also strong markets, we can use the A321. So right now, utilization is at roughly equal, the A321 we use, but clearly we'd like to use the A321 a lot more. It's a very efficient airplane.
Yeah, you said unit cost, which I take it as total cost. So basically, fuel cost advantage is closer to 25 and total unit cost is probably closer to 10.
So I'm saying A320neo versus A321neo. Now, they're the same engine, so you've got the fuel efficiency. And then the larger number of seats helps you. So that's why their unit costs are down by about 10%. Compared to the C20, of course, it's more fuel efficient. But compared to a C20neo, it's the same fuel efficient.
Okay. And Neo versus CEO is another 10%, right, more or less?
Neo versus on fuel itself is 15%.
Okay. Sure. Thanks, Doctor.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Varun Gilodia from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Varun, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me, sir?
Hello?
Yes,
please go ahead. Ask the question,
please. Sorry. So, yeah, sure. Sorry, sir. Thank you so much for
the opportunity. So, sir, a couple of quick questions. First question is on your sequential fuel cost increase. We see that, you know, the fuel prices are up by 26% sequentially and your capacity is up by 25%, which adds up to close to 50%. But sequential increase in fuel cost is about 68%. So is there any other reason behind that? If you could just explain that. And second question is on your CEO aircraft, older engine aircraft phasing out. That seems to be at a much lower run rate than we would be, you know, happy with. So if there are any issues with returning those older aircraft, those are my two questions, sir.
So let me take the first question first. So you're absolutely right. The published rate has, the fuel prices have increased by significantly by 26%. The other added factor which is there is our discounts which we get on our published rate is a flat rate. So as the prices go up, that percentage on impact on fuel CASK becomes higher. So that's the impact you are seeing. Therefore, that increase you are seeing is coming out because of that. So in a net basis, it's all about fuel, which is like the prices coming up.
And on the MH visible on in the year end results is we have not been 100% happy with the tempo of lease returns, but if the time is as we speak right now, we have gained momentum. So was it 23 aircraft for which went through lease return, and right now we are already at 40. So because the last year was the major obstacles in lease return was the COVID situation, the situation with the MROs and the supply chain. So all this has eased now and we're gaining momentum and making good what we have lost maybe in this COVID year at the beginning. But now we're confident that we can finish the backlog which is still there for us and continue also this coming year with something like what we have envisaged as a lease return. So you will see a speed up in this whole process going quarter by quarter going forward.
So the run rate that we are looking at will be close to 40, 45 aircraft per year. Is that the run rate we will be looking
at? That's a good run rate, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arvind Sharma from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my question. Sir, the question on the fleet part, I think you alluded to a number of 45 per year. What will be the net addition to fleet over FY22 and 23? Is there a planned number?
So our total fleet count will be about flat. So we are taking deliveries and returning COs at the same count, the same speed. The total number of seats will go up a little because of the A321.
All right. So second question, sorry, I didn't hear it correctly. What would be the daily cash burn rate in fourth quarter versus the third quarter? Sorry, I know you said it, but I just missed that number.
190 million compared to 150 million.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Those were two questions I had. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my question. So I had two questions actually. So first of all, on the demand, of course, last year, if you remember, I mean, and you just said that demand was driven by tier 2, tier 3 cities. And then last year, actually, the fares were quite low and we had seen some shift from trains to planes. And yet it took 8 to 9 months to reach for the demand to reach about 70-80% of the peak COVID levels. Now, if you see the more bigger impact is in tier 2, tier 3 cities, of course, there's a positive vibe coming from metros. But if you see the non-metros, likes of Pune, likes of Jaipur and all those sort of cities are still suffering. So how do you see the demand recovery this year? What makes you confident that the demand recovery could reach February 2021 level in FY22?
So let me try and answer that. So in the first wave, it was a slow build-up and then a slow decline. This one is a sharp build-up, and all the analysts will tell you bell-shaped curve, so decline will also be sharp. In the first wave, we also had the problem that people were hesitating about not being sure about airline travel. So the first few months, they were like, wait and see, see if your friends are flying, what's going on. That hesitancy regarding airline travel being safe, I don't think it's there at all. People are paying attention to the COVID numbers in terms of total terms. Should I go to the airport? Should I take a taxi, etc.? But it regards airline travel itself. It's very, very, I mean, people are confident about airline travel. So as COVID cases go up or down, we are really amazed at how strongly correlated it is to demand. COVID cases go up and demand plummets immediately. But equally, COVID cases go down and therefore demand goes up just as sharp. So we have modeled all this actually, and this is what is giving us the confidence that yes, we will back to February levels by the end of the year.
But then, Mr. Mehta, I mean, last year we had a lot of planes, passengers shifting because the fares were too low, and now the fares are slightly higher. So we, although the fares are not very high, but the fares are not low enough to attract plane passengers. So don't you think there will be a challenge in terms of getting the same amount of traffic? Although you rightly said
that. Actually, we don't. Because, you know, people who are traveling are traveling. They're not being stimulated by low fares or they're discouraged by high fares. There is a pent-up demand. And I will tell you, like from the latter half of May to the first week of June, we've seen a sharp increase again. So it's very, very sensitive to COVID cases. COVID cases are coming down, and we are absolutely confident that as COVID comes down, travel is going to go up, and we can see it before our eyes. So there's very little doubt in our minds that as long as COVID is controlled, we'll be, the travel demand will return quickly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My second question around...
you're not clearly audible. Can you please use the handset?
Okay, and my second question was around the aircraft economics. So, of course, you said that the fuel, of course, they are more fuel efficient aircraft. But if you see in terms of leases, of course, I mean, the difference is almost double, right? So, but, I mean, so looking at net-net basis, where do you see, I mean, do you really think, of course, on the per seat basis, you might get some benefit, but do you really see any significant benefit coming out of this replacement, 80-20 over the SG-21neo, or it?
So there are two replacements I think you're talking about. One is the classic going to the Neo, and then from the A320 to the A321. I think from the classic to Neo, the numbers are clear to everyone, right? It's 15% lower costs and fuel, so it's a good deal. The A321 versus the A320 is also a very good transition for us. If you're looking, yes, the leasing costs are higher, but leasing costs per seat is significantly lower in the A321. So, and then we have the added advantage that we have a mix of fleet with no complexity around, same pilot, same engines, and yet we can target when we want to use the A321, when we want to use the A320. So it's a very good deal for us to have it in our fleet.
Thank you. Mr. Kumar, the question joined the queue.
We'll hang on to add something.
Yeah, I just want to add one more element which would show that the cost savings are even, can be even higher. When we go back in production, let's say when we fly 16 times a day between Bombay and Delhi, we could reduce it to a quartin and thus save the money of two flights per day. And nevertheless have the same or more capacity. So that shows the whole economics will come back in a much better way, visible way, when the demand comes back and production comes back.
And when Wolfgang says reduced from 16 to 14, the important thing is we now have two slots freed up for something else.
Yeah.
Okay, next person.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Christopher Sol from RWC Partners. Please go ahead.
I just wanted to understand on cargo, how much more capacity can be added or shifted on the capacity side before the freighters come online?
Oh, how much more capacity can we add on cargo? So our freighters are coming next year, you know. In the meantime, we had taken 10 of our airplanes and converted them to cargo in cabin. So those are being used in charters. We are not planning to add to those. We have 10 and with nets and safety nets inside the cabin. So those are dedicated to cargo, plus we'll have the freighter, but we're not adding to the fleet in the interim period. Did that answer your question?
So before the freighters are added, are we going to add more planes?
We are not utilizing our existing fleet, therefore the cargo in the belly is less because we're not flying enough, right? So we carry cargo in belly, we carry cargo in cabin, and then we have the freighter. The cargo in belly is being suppressed because we're not flying enough. The cargo in cabin, we have 10 airplanes, which we use for charter operations. We're not planning to add to those. And then we have the 4 freighters, with the first freighter coming early next year.
Got it. And are the cargo yields, are they kind of, what sort of trend are we looking at?
So cargo yields have been very good overall for the past 12 months. But at this point, they seem to be flattening a little. As we've reported, our overall cargo revenues are up almost 10% year over year.
Okay. Got it. Thanks, Rana.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Monge from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, everyone. I had 2 questions. The first one that I had was more on the share of capacity that Indigo would be having, let's say, 10 year or 2 down the line versus where we are at this point of time.
Sorry, that question is not clear to me. The share of capacity, again, can you repeat that?
Yeah, so in terms of speed or in terms of capacity, what would be the share of Indigo, let's say, 12 months down the line or 24 months down the line? If you could give us some sense versus where we are at this point of time.
To the industry. Are you saying our capacity to the industry's capacity?
Exactly, the fleet, yeah. Your fleet versus the market as such.
That is impossible for me to project. We can talk about our own capacity, but GoAir is buying airplanes. I don't know what Air India is going to do. We don't know what the competition is going to do. We can only talk about our capacity.
Okay, I got that. The second thing that so the question that I would want to kind of put would be also on the money that is being raised or is being thought to be raised. Given how you are thinking through demand reviving pretty soon, is it more of an insurance against something bad happening, or do you think that this kind of money, 3,000 crores, is actually going to be required?
So we've had extensive discussions on this at the board level, of course. And the fact is, it's hard to predict the future right now. It's a very volatile environment. A third wave of COVID could or could not arrive, so we don't really know. Therefore, you're right, it's mostly an insurance. It's not like we feel like we absolutely need the money, but strengthening the balance sheet is always a good idea. As you know, major corporations in this country and around the world are doing it. So it's all an attempt to strengthen the balance sheet even further.
For that, if I may, can I ask one question on the capacity?
Sure.
So you mentioned pent-up demand and that being a possibility driving volumes, let's say in FY23. I just want to ask you, this is your assessment of where capacity for Indigo and others is and will be. Is there a possibility of a demand-supply mismatch of the other side? On the other side?
On the other side, meaning... too much capacity.
The demand is higher. The demand is high and the capacity isn't asked to match up for it.
Look, this pent-up demand is a real factor on the table. Let me give you an example. Male. We used to fly Bombay and Bangalore. And we looked at, analyzed Delhi and Chennai, and it never worked. Like Delhi and Chennai, there's not enough demand. Well, we come out of this sort of first wave in February, March, and suddenly Delhi and Chennai show immense potential. That to me is an example of where there is a lot of pent-up demand, whether we're talking of Thailand or domestically travel, there is a lot of pent-up demand. So yes, I think there is a potential that for the industry as a whole, we could be short of capacity as well. We just don't know.
Okay. for that. Thanks for your response. I will get back into the queue. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anshuman Dave from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted more color on the liquidity schemes which are available to us, because last year we had managed it extremely well. This year, you know, you were saying about 45 billion of available liquidity which can come from SLB and other measures. A, if you could highlight on that part little bit, what are the avenues under that? Second is that, you know, in some of this, we have been paying to all our lessors on time. If what are the other ways, maybe through some tactical negotiations, etc., can we kind of, you know, get to some more liquidity? What are the basic liquidity sources available to us at this point of time? If you could share some color on that will be all.
So as I mentioned, right, we have got this 45 billion is what we have a visibility today, and this is clearly on the table, and we have already almost in discussion, and we closed on few things around this. Beyond this, there are discussions which are going on, and we continue to explore options beyond this. Credit lines, there are lots of banks we are talking to. There are few who have formed up. There are few who are still talking to. And those have not been considered. Similarly, from financing perspective, we have got something on the table. There are few things which we are still discussing with our vendors. So on an overall basis, I think we are in a very comfortable position as we start talk today, because our numbers along with QIP numbers at the start of the year seems fine for us to carry forward. But we are not stopping any which ways to explore more possibilities. And maybe as we go along during the quarters, you'll see us calling out more numbers beyond the number we have already reported.
Right. And this 45 billion is only SLB profit, or is there any backup of this available?
So it's a mix of credit lines and SLB.
Right. And the last question on that front is, if you could share out what is the debt number that we have right now, apart from the finance lease and capitalized lease?
It's there in the report we have given.
Sure. I'll do.
Yeah, you can have a look at
it. Okay. Thank you. That will be all.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vinay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi team, thanks for the opportunity. The first question is on the cargo side. Could you talk a little bit about what kind of industry growth do you expect in cargo, and what kind of a market share will Indigo have within that with the cargo planes coming on board? That's the first question.
I don't think we have the answer on the market share yet. Just to tell you what's happening on cargo, the overall dynamic is that there used to be a lot of white bodies flying around in India and outside India, which used to carry a lot of cargo capacity. Since this white body count has gone down, that's why there's a demand for cargo traffic, and that's what we are tapping into. So it's not only domestic, it's also international. For example, traffic from Vietnam or Bangladesh trying to go to the Middle East, it used to go on the wide bodies before, now it is coming through India, on our narrow body. So that's where we are seeing a lot of growth. It's really the wide body capacity going down that is creating this generation. It's not like cargo traffic overall has improved, but the mode of transportation is shifting towards narrow body. And market share data and all that, frankly, we do not have. We're doing a study on all that and looking at all the opportunities. We've done our first step in terms of the four freighters, but we have a broader study going on a long-term strategic plan for the cargo business.
And so linked to that, is there a risk then the cargo yields drop once the environment normalizes? Because almost every airline is focusing a lot on cargo. And in a normal environment, I would assume the wide-body planes to also come back. So is there a risk on the cargo yield that we are seeing today?
Well, remember, the wide-body planes are in trouble across the world, right?
I mean, before they used to be carrying a lot of one-stop traffic. Let's take an example of the Middle East carriers. They used to carry passenger traffic from the U.S. To the Middle East to India. And now that is coming non-stop from the U.S. side. So the one-stop traffic is in trouble. So I don't see the white bodies coming back in the same sort of magnitude as they were before. I think this is a permanent shift in my mind.
Thanks, that's helpful. And the second question is on the regulations in India. So this time in the downturn, we've seen the regulators step back in. In your view, when do you see regulators pull back? You know, because is there an understanding with the industry that once we go back to pre-COVID levels, then the caps and the fare flows and all those things will go away?
I think Mr. Puri has been quite articulate in that regard. He has said consistently that this is a temporary measure. We want to get out of any kind of regulation. So he says that in every public speech he's made.
Right. That's helpful. Thanks. That's from my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pradhana Varma from UPI AMC. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Sir, in your opening remark, you did mention that in the near term, the international segment, there's a lot of uncertainty in that segment. But over a longer time period, what are your plans of expanding your business in the international segment in terms of adding new destination and whether long haul or short haul? And also, if you could give a sense about the profitability of your international business versus domestic, and how do you see that going forward? Thank you.
So let's go back to the pre-COVID period and start from there as a benchmark. So in the pre-COVID period, we were expanding international aggressively, and our international was accounting for 25% of the total capacity. It also had higher margins than domestic. So highest growth, higher margins, which is a wonderful combination to have. That's why we were very bullish in terms of international expansion. Now, our plans are already there for doing that. Our fleet is in place to do that. So as soon as this COVID crisis is over, we plan to sort of restore our original growth path in terms of international. And let me say that, we talk about this wide-body competition decreasing. Especially during this COVID, we are getting charter demand from such sort of esoteric places, if you will, which is giving us a very good sense of the traffic, which was being carried before one-stop through other hubs, which we can now carry non-stop. So our growth plan again is in that 6-7 hour range from Delhi, Mumbai, Chennai, Bangalore, Kolkata, and every major city in that circle falls into our potential market. So it is being delayed, of course, because of COVID. There will have to be sort of some sort of understanding between governments about travel through the passports or some way of shape or form. But once all that sorts out, I think we'll be going into international markets with rapid sort of growth. And again, as I said, pre-COVID, our international margins were higher than our domestic margins.
Sure. Thank you for that answer. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rahul Agarwal from ICICI Pru Life. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. I've got a couple of questions. My first is with regards to...
Rahul, you're not here, Rahul.
My audible now?
Let's try again. Go ahead.
Are you using a earphone, sir? Please use the handset.
Is this better?
Yes, much better.
Yeah, thanks. So from what I see in the balance sheet, we've got a 145 crore asset held for sale. So if you could just give some sense of what it is and if we are expecting 145 only or there could be some upside to it.
So this is basically that. This is one of the plane engines we had, which is already the agreements were signed and it has not yet been converted into an SLV. So that has been shown as 31st March as asset held for sale. So there is nothing more beyond that. So this is only this was a transaction which happened, which was not completed at the year end. Had it been completed, it would have not. Yeah.
Okay. And my second question is with respect to the tax credit that we don't have, we are not carrying for the last 4 quarters. So we are almost at 0% tax credit. So will this be used against the liability that could come up in Vivad Se Vishwas?
So I'm not clear on the question. So you, tax credit, can you just elaborate on that question, please?
No, so what I'm trying to understand is that Vivad Se Vishwas, we have said that the liability could range from 500 to 1400 crores. And I'm seeing that no tax credit in terms of the loss, no tax credit is being carried forward, which could be used later for our...
So basically, if let me try and understand this question. So basically, it's saying because of Vivad Se Vishwas, I'm not charging any tax amount into my P&L. Is that the question?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to understand whether the tax rate is being adjusted with the Vivad Se Vishwas and we'll not really have any tangible cash outflow. That's what I'm trying to understand.
So let me explain you. So this 2008-2009 assessment year, we had losses, and those losses we have set off against future profits. So what has happened is our reduction in losses has actually got offset with the MAT credit which we have written off subsequently, which otherwise we would have had to charge it into the P&L. So looking at if in a normal circumstances, if we had just taken this VS deal and agreed on that, we would have had to pay some cash flow today. However, because of the write-off which we had taken on MAT credit, I think last year, that sets off my cost, which results in no outflow for the company.
Okay, and the last 3-4 quarters, the tax rate that we are seeing, there is no tax credit being carried forward. Any particular reason for that?
So we don't have any visibility as a, you know, you don't carry any tax credit based on, you normally look at 1 or 2 years. Right now you are in a situation where the future profitability and future revenues are, you know, under the COVID. So everybody is looking at that. So you assess it every quarter and take a charge into the books as per that. The current situation is that we are into COVID, we are into losses, so we are being more pessimistic and we are not recording any income around that.
All right, sir. Thank you. And all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prashant Kothari from PicTech. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. My question is around the liquidity situation again. And I just wondering, how did you guys come up with this number of 30 million rupees? I mean, is there some kind of thumb rule, some formula which kind of helps you to think about how much liquidity we need on the balance sheet? And also kind of as a corollary, as we keep growing our scale, will we need more of cash on the balance sheet? And do we think of like free cash, or do we think of free cash less the debt we have? How do we think about these things? Thank you.
So how did we come up with the number of 3 million? So, you know, we have a worst case scenario of how low should the cash, could the cash go. And we also have a number in mind of we are not willing to tolerate the cash from dropping below this level. That level actually compared to most of the airlines is quite high. So we are pretty conservative that we need a minimum of this amount of cash. Now, frankly, we don't have any scenario which says we'll go below that. We've done a pessimistic scenario, blah, 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 and it's still just about there. But then the question that the board asks is, what about extreme cases? What if there is a third wave COVID? What if there's another 3 months shutdown? What if international doesn't open for 2 years? Now, those truly are extreme cases, which no one can model, frankly. So it's against those extreme cases that we're saying let's have this cash balance as an insurance. It's almost like a disaster risk insurance, if you will. But beside all that, we think it's a good idea to have a lot of cash on our books. We want to have a strong balance sheet. And you know, we're going to do everything to make sure that the cash liquidity comes through revenues and not anything else. But if the revenues were to shut down completely for whatever reason, we still want to have a strong balance sheet. So we came to that answer of 3,000 crores based on that. What is the worst case scenario that we can think of? We still want to have a certain amount of cash, and therefore we came up with this number. But it really is disaster risk insurance.
Right, and is it that you think about free cash on a gross basis or on a net basis, like free cash less the debt here?
So free cash is the cash which is available for us to spend, right? So that's the way we look at it. Now, I'm not sure about when you say net basis or gross basis. Yes, free cash also takes care of my when I look at my liability, current liability, which I'm going to pay in next few months. So that we obviously keep in our mind. But that free cash takes care of that when I look at my balance sheet in a particular date, we have that visibility that how much it will cover from that day onwards. So for us, free cash is the cash which is available for us to use any point in time. Did I answer the question?
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pulkit Patni from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
So thanks a lot for taking my question. A couple of quarters back, you used to talk about where our cash burn would be. So you did speak about, the 19 crore odd, which was the cash burn in the March quarter. Any guidance of what their number could be for the next couple of quarters, your daily cash burn?
I don't remember giving that guidance, and frankly, the answer is that I don't know. It would be very speculative to give that number, frankly.
Absolutely. You cannot give a guidance of cash burn going forward. But obviously, the situation is there, the COVID situation, the revenues are not there. And we have already called out that we expect that our cash burn is going to be higher in this quarter at least.
Sure. No, you used to say that it was about 40 crore a day, which you would bring down to about 30 crore. My second question is related. Can you give a sense of what levers of cost cuts do we have? As you rightly highlighted, nobody knows if there's going to be a third wave or not. So what other levers do we have in terms of, cutting costs further, assuming a worst case scenario of this thing prolonging?
Fuel is obviously our biggest line item, and just reducing fuel consumption is a big deal for us, and so we are focusing on that. Employee costs, unfortunately, we've taken a lot of pain already. We had a layoff, we had pay cuts, then we did another leave without pay. So the amount of further pain we can tolerate in that is very, very minimal. Then we are looking at every other opportunity, including, of course, aircraft ownership costs, talking to the lessors, seeing what sort of deals we can get. And then all the other non-discretionary costs, everything that we have, we are cutting back on. But I won't hold our breath in terms of we have major, major opportunities to reduce our unit costs further. What we need to do is get the airline going and get more on the revenue side quickly.
Fair point, sir. And that answers my question. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from L&T Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for taking my question. First, I just want to understand in terms of given the sale and lease back that you get on these new planes, even if the plane is standing for a year, does it still make sense for you to take a new plane? I mean, I'm coming in context to the fact that last year you had guided for a flat fleet count and our fleet count has grown by 9%. So just trying to understand that.
Yeah, and the answer is yes, we've looked at all that very carefully. And no matter what scenario we look at, we say it's better to take the airplanes now. And it's not like, in 6 months we start bleeding on that cash that we got. No, it's a much, much longer term than that.
Right. And just my second question, I had a similar question last quarter, was given that the industry scenarios and the demand, like you're saying, is not really getting stimulated, it's more of people who want to fly are flying. What is the ability, do you see to raise yield, especially in the scenario that, historically we used to operate at 85% load factor. but maybe for the foreseeable future, we'll have to probably do a 75 or something. In which case, are we going to adjust the yield to at least get a commensurate level of profitability at that sort of load factor?
Yeah, so I think, you know, yields in India are really the lowest in the world, practically, and lower by about half. Average fares in for a low-cost carrier like Spirit or Southwest in the U.S., if it's $130, $140, in India it's like $60. So, and yet our cost structure, as you know, is on aircraft and fuel is the same. So the yields don't have much room to go down, frankly, and without more blood on the streets and more airlines collapsing. Then there's all the issues of middle class growth, of people substituting from rail to air, etc. So I think over time, not in large numbers, but I think yields will generally tend to drift backwards.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is in the line of Ankur Sharma from HDFC Life. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening. Just one question. You know, on the employee cost, you know, when I look at your capacity, there's a 25-26% increase quarter on quarter, but the employee cost, you know, is kind of at the same 735-740 crore number, both in Q3 and Q4. So if you could help me understand what's going on there, and also, you know, for 22, what's the kind of number you're looking at on an annualized basis?
Okay, I'm not sure I understood your question, but to the extent I understand it, on employee costs, what has happened, as you know, first of all, we took a 15% layoff, and then we all took severe pay cuts. And then we all added this leave without pay. So year over year, our employee costs are down about 30%. And then that stabilized and it stayed there. There was a second follow-on question. I couldn't follow that.
So my question was, you know, despite an increase in capacity in Q4 by about 25%, your employee costs are flat on a Q-on-Q basis. So why is that? Is it because you've not taken any hike, or, you know, are they the same levels as Q3? And what would be the number you're looking at for FY22 on a full year basis on employee cost?
Yeah. So for the following year, the first thing we'll probably do is get rid of the leave without pay. And then gradually we'll bring the pay cuts back. So it's impossible for me to predict what the number will be, but it'll still be lower than before. But the 30% is not sustainable. We need to climb back up. But I don't have a forecast for where it'll end up.
And to your question on the quarter four, it's flat because obviously we did not reinstate the cuts which we had done. So they could continue.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that would be our last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Ronald Dutta for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
You know, I just wanted to conclude by talking broadly about what the situation we find ourselves in. And many people have asked me, why are you so optimistic about IndiGo? And I just want to highlight why that is. So let's look at the broad drivers of our performance. First is fuel. Fuel, as you know, is our biggest cost item. And our cost per flying hour is down 10%. Now, that's a big deal, I think. And it will continue to get better as we take more and more neon. Then we said cargo. Cargo was always a small item on our P&L. It's becoming a bigger and bigger piece. And that, again, is a structural change that will stay for some time. Yield, as I said. Yields are very low in India, and I don't expect to see a dramatic change, but yields will only get better over time. The A321 is camouflaged in all these statements. The first three you can see in our statement. You can't see the A321 effect. But again, the A321 effect is driven by two things. It is more efficient cost-wise, and it allows us to, in a very targeted way, to fly on the right flights. And then there's the quality of flying and customer service that we are offering. We are number one in OTP by far. Our complaint ratio is the lowest it's ever been. Our net promoter score is high. So all the broad matrices of performance are in the right direction. There's only one negative. And the one negative is that there are not enough customer load factors.
Now, the positives that I talked about are all structural. They are here to stay and probably get better over time. The one negative, which is the customer loads, is a very short-term cyclical factor. So it is going to reverse, and when it reverses, the structural advantages to customer loads in terms of, as we said, the railway substitution, middle income growth, etc., will show up. So there's only one thing we're waiting for, and that's for the load factors to improve. Now, and we all know that it's going to do so at some time. So overall, I really think this is almost like a Cinderella moment for IndiGo, where, yeah, the bottom line looks ugly, but very soon things are going to get a lot better. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of IndiGo, that concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.